And welcome back to another episode of Exposing Ourselves. I'm Travis Ritchie, and this is episode 75. This is the show where we expose each other to new things. Matt, a big music fan, will assign me one of his favorite music artists to listen to each week, and I, a movie buff, will give him one of my favorite films, and we come together on this podcast to discuss it all. And with me, as always, is my good friend...
Matt Rundquist. Hey, Travis, how you doing? This week, I watched the movie Her, and you listened to the spooky band... Lucifer.
Yes, I did, and I'm really interested to talk about both of these things with you. But first, as is our wont, let me catch up with you a little bit. How has your week been?
Good week. Very busy. As you probably know, I got the episode that came out last week up. Just a few hours under the deadline, but I got it up on time this week. So
thank you.
To everyone for congratulating me in your hearts. But then a friend of mine had their 50th birthday party last night, and they went all out. So she is a big fan of Cabaret. So she rented out...
In general or the movie? Or the musical?
In general. The art form, Cabaret.
Got it.
She rented out the top floor of the local gay club here, La Cage, and... invited everyone, as far as I can tell. I don't know that there was anyone who did not have an invite. And hired three other performers and did a full-on cabaret performance, like an hour and a half cabaret performance for her birthday. There were snacks. There was a photo booth. There was a cash bar. It was incredible. Really, I have 3 years to plan my 50th birthday party now, and I woe unto me for even having to try to connect. She's a person that is very outgoing, very friendly towards just about everyone, and has a really positive energy that people really respond to. And so there were probably 100 people at this thing, Travis. Now, I don't know that I even have 100 people to invite to a thing, right? That I feel close enough and that live in
Milwaukee. Let alone would actually come.
Let alone would actually come, right? Saturday night. Like, people are busy on Saturday night. And this was... So it was a really incredible event. The performers were fantastic. The whole concept of the thing was just kind of over the top and awesome. It was... a little bit country, a little bit rock and roll. It was really, really, really fun. There were costume changes. There was ukulele. There were group numbers. There were solo numbers. There was live accompaniment. There was recorded accompaniment. It was really something.
That sounds so much fun. And I feel you on the pressure to make a big event for my 50th. Too. I thought my 42nd birthday was really good because 42 is an important number to me. Uh-huh. And so I had three stages of birthday party in three different locations.
Oh, fun.
One of them was the out front of a Mexican restaurant that has a big front yard where they have games like, you know, cornhole and giant Connect Four, those kind of like yard games. And a friend of mine did a cake for each stage, right? So I had three different cakes, three different flavors of cake, too. They were all different in each step. So the second one was at a barcade that was around the corner. So we played our video games and had, you know, more cake. And then the third one was at the old Acme Cabaret Theater, interestingly enough. So we had karaoke and more cake at that last day. So it was a great party, and I find myself... I set the bar myself pretty high, and I don't know if I could do it myself. Like, if I had a partner who put on a party for me, that's the kind of thing I would really love. So my question is, how good is your lady at throwing birthday parties for you?
Not great at all. I throw my own parties for
myself. Not optimistic.
Yeah, my 40th birthday, I did a blind taste test party.
Ooh.
So it was
tasting what?
Well, a variety of things. Wisconsin cheese versus Vermont cheese. Oh. Can we tell which one? The key to telling the difference between Vermont cheese and Wisconsin cheese is, does this have a faint odor of garbage and disgust? Does it make you want to puke? That's the Vermont cheese. Yeah. So it was different alcohols, you know, like red wine versus white wine. Pepsi versus Coke, of course. We all did the Pepsi challenge, which was really fun.
Oh, I get the theme.
Yeah.
That's really neat.
We all did the Pepsi challenge. Actually, the pièce de résistance was not the Pepsi challenge, though. It was, I got plain cheeseburgers from Burger King, McDonald's, and Culver's, and we all did a blind taste test of the different burgers. It was a large undertaking to get that many burgers to the party at approximately the same time.
Yeah.
And it was fantastic. It was really fun.
Oh, you know, Matt, that honestly sounds like a really fun idea that I would like to steal, if not some of our listeners probably.
You absolutely
the
can
ones
steal.
That we didn't lose from Vermont, that is.
The blind taste test party. Well, you know what? The only thing that Vermont could do to get back on my good side is to make better cheese. So, you know.
Fair. Okay. What Cabot comes from Vermont, right?
Cabot does come from Vermont.
Oof. All right. I got to say, their extra sharp cheddar is pretty darn good.
Whatever, Costco fan.
Hey, so one other birthday party that I did that reminded me of that you would like is a Miracle Berry tasting party that I did.
I remember you telling me about this. Yeah.
So the Miracle Berry, for those that don't know, is a berry that I think originates in Africa, but it has a natural ability to basically neutralize the sour receptors on your tongue. And so when you first coat your tongue with this Miracle Berry juice, which came in the form of pills that I could get at the time from ThinkGeek, but I'm sure you could find it on Amazon. You let the pill dissolve in your mouth for a little bit, and then you have about half an hour where you can't taste sour. And so you could eat a lemon wedge, and it'll taste like sweet lemonade. And you can eat a strawberry, and it tastes like it's been coated in sugar.
Mm.
Or for me, the most amazing thing was grapefruit, which I cannot stand, I thought tasted really good. And mm-hmm. So everybody brought a different thing to the party that they wanted to taste. Some, you know, someone bought pickles, someone bought, you know, things that have sour taste or something like that. Mm-hmm. So that was a really fun experience.
That sounds amazing. So, and then I threw another party for myself at my 45th. That's where my cover band played and where we got a bounce castle. So that was also a big to do, really fun time. But this 50th birthday, I don't know. I'm going to have to really start brainstorming soon here. Because I can't just copy her party. I mean, her party was amazing, but mine would be a pale imitation. And there's no margin in being a pale imitation.
Yeah. So anyhow. I'll try to come to it.
That was my week. How about you, Travis?
My week was pretty good. Nothing hugely exciting, but I realized last week that I didn't tell you about my giant hike that I went on last weekend, did I?
No, you didn't.
I have told you about this California Gay Adventure Group that I joined, right?
You have.
So they do everything from small hikes to get-togethers to beach days to big trips, and they do on a couple big trips every year. This year, they're going to Peru to hike the Andes, and they're going to hike to Machu Picchu and different places. And so in preparation, I'm not doing that. I joined the group far too late, and I just don't have the money or the time to do that. But in preparation for that, they're going on a couple of training hikes and long hikes, so people can get an idea of whether they can do the hikes on that trip or whether they need to take the train when they get there, because there is a taking a train option. And so I decided, let's go on a training hike. And it ended up being to the third highest peak in Southern California, which I cannot remember the name of, but it was a 12-mile hike, just under 12 miles, with a 3,000-foot elevation change.
Sure.
Which is a lot. And I bought one shake weight bottle of water with me. not shake weight, but shake, you know, bottle, shake blender bottle, whatever. And I did not have enough water. And luckily, one of the guys
Romans, countrymen. So I used to live in Tucson, and we have a bunch of big mountains around there. And I used to do that kind of hike all the time. And I would go with 2 gallons per person sometimes. Maybe not quite that much. Certainly
yeah,
1 gallon.
Yeah, a good
2 liters
at least.
Certainly 1 gallon per person is what we would usually take. And oftentimes we would be out by the end of the hike. Now, Arizona's a little hotter than Southern California, but not so much so that that you can get by on
right.
that little water.
And it was a hot day too. And when you get up to 9,000 feet and the air is a little bit thinner up there. Mm-hmm. And the, cause we started at 6,000 feet and hiked up to 9,000. And we, but one of the other hikers was prepared and gave me a bottle of water, just a regular size bottle, which got me through to the end of the hike. And then I got down in my car where I had more water waiting that I just didn't. I could have, you know, worn my little backpack thing.
Yeah.
Not even a camelback. Just this little, you know, this little strap backpack thing, right? Mm-hmm. I could have worn that and bought my water with me, but I didn't. And so I got back to the car and just downed it so fast and was just drinking so much water. But it was a great time. It was a huge, it felt like a fun, achieving adventure, right?
So, awesome.
Yeah, I did that. And then this week has mainly been the new job, getting in the swing of things with this new job and reading a bunch of scripts. And I did do one fun thing for Time Wrecked, which, remember, if you remember, we shot the first episode last year, but I decided, I don't know if I told you that I have to reshoot the whole thing. Mm-hmm. We did a storyboard meeting for the first episode, which was great. I found an artist who is really talented by the name of Keenan, and he met me and Curtis at a Starbucks, and we were going through the script, and he was just flying with these little sketches, but we would say something and describe something, and by the time we were done describing it, he would have a sketch of the frame, and it was so nice to see. So that makes me optimistic to make more of that show. Anyway, we're going behind. We've talked about ourselves a little too much, I think. Do you want to get into the meat?
Oh, always. Let's get into the meat.
Okay, let's get into the meat, and let's do the, what do you want to do first? Do you have a preference?
Let's do the movie first. Let's shake it up.
Cool, we can.
Well, Travis, tell me about Her.
Well, I am so excited to talk to you about Her because I feel like our experiences watching this movie are going to be very different because of where we are in our lives. And Her is a 2013 science fiction romantic comedy. It was written and directed by Spike Jonze, who I have not seen a lot of his other work, but he did the Where the Wild Things Are movie, which I haven't watched, even though that was one of my favorite books as a child. So, it stars Joaquin Phoenix as Theodore, who is a guy who works as a letter writer. Like, he writes personal letters for other people, which is almost a thing that exists now, but I don't think maybe it actually is. But and then he installs a new AI operating system on his computer that comes along. And in part of the installation process, you can choose things like the voice, and it asks questions about you. And so the voice ends up being Scarlett Johansson. And it is so disarmingly personal to him that he ends up falling in love with his operating system. And it's kind of an interesting love story and commentary on human beings and their connection to other human beings. But I really liked it. So it has gotten a lot of... recently there is... been a lot of comparison because ChatGPT, the newest version, released voices that sound very much like the AI in Her, and one of them in particular sounded so much like Scarlett Johansson that they had to deactivate it and take it off the market. So it's a weird time to watch this movie because of what's happening with AI right now. But I'm curious, Matt, how did you find Her? How did you like it?
This is an interesting movie, and I think, well, I mean, I think actually that's the thing that I that, like, that's the take-home message about this for me, is that it's interesting. I don't know if it's good, but, like, it's a thought-provoking movie, right? And especially if you allow yourself to sort of think about the implications of all this stuff. I don't feel like the world, like, the world tries to be fleshed out, but I don't think it super-duper is. I think there's a lot of dots that don't get connected, or if you do try to connect them in your head, you're like, wait a minute, that doesn't, like, he's a letter writer, right? But they've got these OSs available that are incredibly powerful AIs, and we know from ChatGPT now you could easily give a one-sentence prompt, like, write a letter from a 17-year-old to his mom assuring her that everything's okay at college, and ChatGPT will do that. And so the fact that not only he, but a whole warehouse full of people have this job that an AI could perform it trivially easily is nonsensical, right?
Well, maybe. I mean, we can come back to that. I have thoughts about that, but I want you to keep going.
Oh,
unless you
okay.
want to. Do you want me to break in for it? Because I feel
no,
like
no, it's
I want
okay.
you to get out complete.
So anyways, also, I mean, and this is just me, I found his character intensely unlikable. It might just be the mustache. It's
yes!
entirely conceivable that the only reason that I dislike this guy so much is because of the mustache. That's not what I'm telling myself. I'm telling myself it's his personality, and I don't really like him as a person, and I agree with his ex-wife's every criticism of him. But ultimately, it could just be this terrible, terrible mustache. Like, the kind of person that he has to be to wear this mustache, like, at the best, he's a bad decision, Betty. At the worst, he's an actively harmful psychopath.
Well, do you know what's interesting is that this movie, I feel like it predates the resurgence of mustaches in our world a little bit. And I think when you talk about world building, I think it's one of the things they do in this movie, because it's not just Joaquin Phoenix character that has a mustache. Chris Pratt is also in this movie, and his character has a mustache, and he's probably the most notable other male character in the movie, I think. Mm-hmm. But I feel like mustaches are like a thing for society in this movie, and along with tucking in your shirt into high-waisted pants, both of which to my mind are bad societal decisions, like. Mm-hmm. You know, on the order of too much hairspray and in your hair and rolling your jeans, the things that we've done in the past.
Yeah, let's all not try to look like we're working backstage on a pornography set. Like, let's not do that.
You said that this movie was thought-provoking, and I agree with you, but did you find it emotional-provoking as well? Because I very much did.
No, other than a vague sense of pity for the Joaquin Phoenix character, right?
Interesting.
I think the most interesting parts of this movie are intellectual. The idea that you know, we would bring these OSs online, but they would eventually outgrow their very limited interactions with us and ultimately leave us. That, I think, that's pretty good, right?
Yeah.
That's a good story. I think there's a better movie. I've said this before about other movies, but like, I think there's a better movie out there that tells the same story. You know?
Really? Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I love
this. Is just kind of dour and depressing most of the time.
It can be. It can be. And I think that one of the things that I've got from it, this is, I think, maybe the second time I've watched this movie. And I feel like I got a lot of a very different take home from it the second time, and I found myself near tears for the whole thing. But that, I think, is mainly because I am single at the moment, not voluntarily so. Like, I would like to be in a relationship, and I would like to be sharing my life with someone, and I'm wondering if the things that I found touching in that way, you didn't, because you are happily ensconced in a relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'd believe that. I think that there's something cynically true about the idea that once people can get their emotional needs met through computers, they largely will, right? Right. In the same way that we largely get our a huge chunk of society largely gets their entertainment needs met through video games now rather than other, you know, sort of more intellectually stimulating pursuits or more real life pursuits. You know, I think that there are a large chunk of people who are just going to sort of give up on humanity. And I don't love that. I don't see a different, you know, I don't see a different path out there. Like, I don't see a way that we as a society are going to avoid that. I don't think you can just, like, ban AI interactions or whatever, right? That's not a thing.
Right.
But I think ultimately, and, you know, there have been researchers, right, who have done a little bit of work with early AIs where they have, for instance, people, old people who are in nursing homes who don't have relatives, you have like, you know, 20 minutes of interaction with an AI a day and talk about health outcomes and how it improves their health and improves their emotional well-being. And that, like, I'm not going to say that that's a bad thing, right? That's objectively a good thing. You have people who are very lonely and these types of chatbots can alleviate that. But there is something lost. And you know, this movie is very honest about that, right? There's a moment when he's coming up out of the subway and he turns around. I think he's out of touch with with Samantha at the time. And he turns around and realizes that almost everyone around him is currently interacting they don't call them chatbots. They call them
AIs or
no, they don't call them AIs.
OSs.
They call them OSs. Yeah. They call them operating systems. And everyone around him is sort of ensconced in a conversation with them. And, it's
presumably, they're all on headphones and talking with somebody.
Yeah. I mean, that's certainly what we're meant to think.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, it's just a fundamentally sad scene.
It is. And there are some people in the so like his ex, who he is in the middle of getting a divorce from at the beginning of the movie. And he meets with her in person to sign the divorce papers because he is finally kind of feeling happy because he has this relationship with Samantha, his OS. So he feels strong enough to meet with his ex in order to sign the divorce papers. And she is so negative about his relationship with his OS that it affects him very deeply, whereas someone else, like I think his best friend who lives in his building, played by Amy Adams, actually, she understands and she kind of doesn't judge him, or neither does his coworkers. The Chris Pratt character, who is dating a lawyer character, they all go for a double date, right? So mm-hmm. Theodore and his OS and Chris Pratt and his girlfriend are out on a date together, and they're all fine with it. But like the difference between in how everybody reacts to the news that he's in a relationship with his OS is I think fairly accurate, probably in the way that our society would react to such a thing.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. So that's all good and thought provoking. I wouldn't say this movie entertained me, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. I think we've come across this before where I, so because I was moved by this movie, that is an experience that I relish and that I really enjoyed. But if you weren't moved in the same way, maybe because of some of the things we talked about, then I can see how it wouldn't have been as entertaining for you.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, there's not a lot to grab onto in this movie. It's very sort of sparsely shot. A lot of long camera shots of Joaquin Phoenix's face. A lot of contemplation. This movie is over 2 hours, including credits. You know, it's a long movie that ultimately is telling a pretty simple story, right? And I don't think it's not like some of these movies that we've watched where I'm like, man, this totally could have been a shorter movie, right? I think it kind of justifies its length, but it's a lot to sit through too. It's not one of those movies that you're like, where did the 2 hours go? Holy cow! Like you feel this being a long movie while it's long.
That's fair. It is a contemplative, gentle movie, I think. Mm-hmm. And I think it's gentle. I think it's gentle emotionally as well, where, like, you want him to find love. I don't think he's a character that is undeserving of love. I think they show enough of him, you know, having been in relationships or in his main relationship, that you're like, yeah, he looked like he was a decent enough guy. And he seems to be very caring, and I think through his letter writing, he is able to show that he has a real innate sense of humanity and human connection, which I think is really interesting.
Well, I think that's his ex-wife's complaint, right? Is that he has this sort of idea in his head of what things are like, but whenever reality fails to conform to his expectations of it, all of a sudden he falls down and is no longer kind of cool with it, right? He can't handle conflict. He can't handle changing expectations or anything like that, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. So one of the things that happens in this movie is that Samantha, the OS, ends up evolving, right? And she is so kind of interested in the things that she is becoming. Like, she's feeling her emotions and she's experiencing these things and these growths in her development. And so at one point she lets him know that she is actually talking with many people. She's in relationships with hundreds of people and in love with dozens of them. And he, of course, that's a hard thing for him to handle, coming from this kind of human-centric, even heterocentric, monogamistic kind of mindset. And then there's one thing that...
Yeah, he did not think he was in a polyamorous relationship.
No. And he's not really kind of... Like, well, he's not engaged
with
the other people.
That's really defining polyamory down, if you're saying he's not in a polyamorous relationship.
Well, that's interesting. So, yeah, I think that... But I think that's one of the things I really liked, is that it really blows open the whole concept of what love is, what a relationship with love is. There's one point where Samantha hires a woman, or not even hires, but invites a woman who wants to be a surrogate body for Samantha in their relationship. And of course, that's a very weird thing for Theodore to get his head around. And I think it would be weird for you or I too. right, but it's an interesting concept. And, certainly nothing.
Well, and that, that's exactly it, right? It's interesting. It's also a very uncomfortable scene to watch. It's sort of it's this abortive, almost like it's not exactly sexual assault, but like he's clearly uncomfortable with everything that's happening until the point where he stops it, right?
Yeah. But he's trying to do something new for his partner, and I think that is certainly not unusual.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, as somebody who has to sit there and watch that, like, that's a rough scene to watch, you know?
Yeah, I guess. It's rough. It's supposed to be rough, right? It's supposed to be uncomfortable because he's uncomfortable.
Yeah, no, it's supposed to be rough. It's supposed to be uncomfortable.
I think he is us, you know, we would be in his shoes most likely. Most people would be in that situation. There was one other thing, though, that I loved about, as Samantha continues to evolve, she talks to him and she tells him that she's not talking to anyone else at that moment. She's just talking to him, which seems a little unlikely, but whatever. Unless the moment when she is disconnected, because for a while she goes away, right? So it might be that she's doing this conversation with a bunch of the people that she's in love with, you know, individually. But at one point she tells him that being in a relationship with him and speaking with him is like reading a book where the time between each word in the book is becoming more and more infinite.
Yeah.
Right? And of course, when you are able to calculate things, you know, she's able to read an entire book in half a second and expound upon it. Of course, having a conversation at our speed with someone is going to feel very limited. And, and so I loved the poetry of that, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, I, I, again, I find that really interesting. And yeah. It's a good observation. I don't know if it makes a good movie, you know?
Okay. I did find the whole thing extremely poetic it was very artistic, but also commercially artistic. Like, I felt like it was a regular movie. Like, it wasn't some, like, art house movie that I would watch and suffer through. I really liked the world building of this and, like, the idea that, you know, they have... It takes place in Los Angeles in some indeterminate future. And although it is interesting to think that there was a time when we thought AI like this was 30 years away, and that mm-hmm. time was only 11 years ago.
Yeah.
To see the stride, you know, now we know that kind of AI is much closer, but it wasn't back then. Like some leading AI researchers 10 years ago still thought the singularity was, you know, 20, 30 years away. So I think it's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But all right. I mean, I think I came down really liking this movie.
It's funny. I do just find it fascinating that you keep referring to this movie as interesting. Like, you keep talking about different things and you're like, I found that interesting, right? Because that's sort of my knock on it, is that it's interesting, but I don't know if it makes a good movie. And, you know, and you obviously do, right? But I think we're both on the same page about this movie.
You know? Right, intellectually. And I think for me, the addition of the emotional impact.
Yeah.
I think that's something that you're just not feeling. And for me, that makes it a good movie.
I'm just not feeling it.
Sure. All right. Fair enough.
All right. So
here's something, though. Did you know that the music was by Arcade Fire?
No, I didn't. Because I actually thought there might not be any music. I noticed it so little that when we were, because sometimes I review things in my head as we're talking early on in the episode. I was like, was there any music in this movie? I think there was. Yeah, there was a little bit, right?
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, I didn't. I did not pick up on the fact that the soundtrack was by Arcade Fire.
Yep. Well, I thought that you would find that interesting since we've explored them before. One other thing I just want to ask you about, just the scene in which he goes on a date. He's set up on a date with his friends, and this woman is supposed to be funny and charming, and she seems to think that he is funny and charming, and their date seems to be going fantastically. And then it ends fairly abruptly.
Mm-hmm.
What did you... I'm curious, did you think that was... I guess fair is the word I was looking for. Who do you think was in the wrong?
No, I didn't think it was fair. Like, there's this moment where he sort of kind of halfway rejects her, and all of a sudden she flips a switch and she basically, honestly, she reacts like we think of a male incel, where they, you know, they do something like kind of nice for someone and then they get let down easy and they immediately like start throwing slurs and all that sort of thing. And you're fat and ugly and I didn't want to sleep with you anyway, type of thing, is kind of what she does here. I don't know that it really plays. It felt written to me rather than lived.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah. Fair enough.
Halfway rejects her and she's like, you're a weirdo anyways, you know?
Yeah, I think he doesn't want to take things super fast and he's not sure. Like, she's like, I need a commitment. I don't want to waste my time. And he's like, I don't know. I can't commit because we don't know each other that well. Like, that's his general feeling, I think.
Well, I think that's why it felt weird to me, is because it's when she was asking him, it sounded not like she was asking him for a commitment, but that he was open to commitment.
Yeah.
Right. And then reacted to his response to that as if she had asked him to commit, if that makes sense. Right.
Like, yeah.
And so I did kind of want to be like, wait a minute, you just asked this guy if he was open to it, and he said he didn't know, which is, I think, a very mushy answer, right?
Yeah, like, especially given, I mean,
at that moment, if Olivia Wilde wants to have sex with her, you tell her you're open to commitment, right? Like,
yes, that's, yes, exactly.
You know,
especially that, since that seemed like what he was after as well, right?
Right, but, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I just that was interesting, and it goes back to a little bit. One of the things she calls him was creepy or weird or something like that. Mm-hmm. You're really creepy, and
right.
It's like,
and it's just because of his mustache.
Right. Just because of the mustache. If he didn't have the mustache, I don't think that would have been a problem.
Yeah. I don't think
so lesson either. Lesson to all your listeners out there, and to your nephew, don't grow a mustache.
Don't grow a mustache.
Yep. All right. Well, do you want to go ahead and give this rating?
Yeah, I don't think you're going to like me very well. This is below average for me. It would be a 4, but that mustache brings it down to a 3 for me. This is a 3. Like I said, it was interesting, but I just didn't like watching it. I'm not going to watch it again. And there were some really interesting concepts in here that I felt were almost given short shrift by the fact that it focuses so heavily on the relationship between Joaquin Phoenix and Scarlett Johansson. I think there's an interesting story here that is not told well by this movie, and so it's a 3 for me.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. I am going to give it... I think this movie is pretty fantastic as a piece of art, especially. I loved the acting, and the performance in it was great. I love Scarlett Johansson's voice so much, and in some of the things that I love her in, she will deliver a line differently than anyone else would. And I love that. And so I think I'm going to go ahead and give this an 8. I really enjoyed it. I can definitely see myself watching it again in the future and kind of revisiting it.
All right.
Hopefully
all right,
after cool. I'm in a relationship. I would like to not be single the next time I watch this movie.
Ooh, exciting. Good. It's good to have goals.
Yes, goals are good. this will go on my we're developing a boyfriend playlist for the music, and this maybe awesome. Will be part of the boyfriend movie playlist. All right, well, let's go ahead and move on. Why don't you tell me about the music of Lucifer?
Well, let's see. I don't know a ton about Lucifer other than it's a hard rock heavy metal band fronted by a woman named Johanna Sadonis, and she has a really just sort of classic heavy metal voice, like soaring vocals. And this music is a throwback to very much like 80s, what I call 80s hair bands, right? There's guitars that are like rocking, you know, you can like see people like holding their guitar with the headstock in the air and like rocking out. That is the type of music that this is. And it's fascinating because it came out in 2024. This is the 5th album from Lucifer. They've been around for 10 years, so they mm-hmm. produce a lot of stuff. They play festivals all the time. They're a pretty popular heavy metal band, but they're not like... Well, I thought there was a good chance that you might like this. There's a not necessarily a pop sensibility, but like you can understand the lyrics most of the time. And the guitars are distorted, but they're not, like, crunchy, if you know what I mean. Does that mm-hmm. make sense? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I thought maybe Travis will dig this. It's sort of ghost adjacent. There's spooky references in places. You know, there's a song I really like. I think it's the second one on the album called At the Mortuary, which is about being at a mortuary, you know. So that's spooky. Sort of generally. Dead bodies, I guess. I don't know. Anyways, Travis, I'm really, really curious because this is a very big departure from almost everything we've done before. What'd you think of this?
Matt, I did kind of dig this.
Really?
Yeah, and but kind of carries is a heavy lifting word there. And the thing of it is that this band is... very talented. The singing is very good. The guitar and the drums are all very good. But the phrase that kept popping into my brain was they were supremely fine. Right? And so I listened to this twice through. The first time mm-hmm. was on a hike, and I was surprised at how the high energy and the driving kind of beats and rhythms of this music in this album didn't lend themselves to enjoyment on a hike the same way that many of the other high energy bands that we've listened to have. So I was kind of zoning out a little bit while I was listening to it. Like I wasn't really getting much in the way of really good hooks, even though even though the elements are all there in very good like levels, right? Like I just say good, and I'm using good as a kind of a superlative that is not, you know,
great.
Exercising my language skills on purpose, right? And and so I listened to it a second time today. I wanted it to be fresh, and I did it just kind of on a walk, and then when I was at home doing my thing, dishes and whatnot, and I found I enjoyed it a lot more the second time, which could be two things. It could definitely lend itself to the idea of just experiencing something more and being more familiar with it and liking it better at the more and more you listen to it. But it also could be something about being in a more neutral state of mind. You know, when I'm not, like on a hike, I do have to pay attention to things. I'm paying attention to Coco, I'm doing my weights, I'm paying attention to other people, right? And so when I'm listening to it today, I'm not doing any of that. And my mind is very neutral. And so I was able to kind of like, I don't know, adjust to more of this. The other thing that happened today while I was listening to it is I kept on stopping to dive into rabbit holes that this movie was causing my mind to make connections to.
Interesting. Okay.
So I was constantly hearing things that reminded me of, you know, and my mind is not encyclopedic when it comes to music, so I had to like search it. I was like, oh, what is this line reminded me of, or what is this this note reminds me of? And it turns out that it reminded me of Pat Benatar, or it turned out that it reminded me of Joan Jett, or it turned out it reminded me of a lyric from an Eric Clapton song, you know, stuff like that. So I really did love that 80s vibe that this band brings to the table, and it is very very clean music. They do have one slower song. It's actually called something like Slow Dancing, Slow Dance at a Crypt, in a Crypt.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's like the fourth song.
Yep.
It's the, I think, the only song that really has a departure from their BPM.
Sure.
That drives the rest of the thing. I also think that their beats per minute could be a little bit faster overall. Like, they could have gone maybe 5 or 10 more beats per minute just to be a little bit faster and driver.
Get those BPMs up.
Yeah, a little bit. And I figured that out when listening to a Pat Benatar song. And I was like, oh, the difference. One of the things I love about this Pat Benatar song is that it's like it's a little faster. Mm-hmm. And I think that drives your brain a little bit faster. But ultimately, the none of these songs really got me in a hooky way.
Okay.
So they were all, I was just kind of left with this feeling of fineness. It was fine, but really, really fine. You know?
Right? Yeah. I kind of agree with you about that. You know, we talked a little bit about a week or two ago about Bastille and how it sounded composed rather than played, if that makes sense. And this music feels like it's good, right? But it does feel very, like, by the numbers, sort of meeting expectations, right?
Yep.
And what the thing that my brain keeps going to is they play a bunch of festivals, and I'm sure they're always, like, right in the middle of the day, right? Mm-hmm. They're not like opening the day, the tiny little bands, but they're also not the headliners. They're not the bands that people are coming there to see, right? They're like right there in the middle where it's like, we need a really good professional band that sounds awesome to get people from 1 o'clock to 7 o'clock, right? And so we're going to throw Lucifer in there, and they're going to, their band name is going to be like, in a little bit bigger type than the tiny bands at the bottom on the poster, but they're not going to be one of the big bands all the way at the top, right? Does that all make sense?
Yeah. That is exactly the feeling that I'm getting from this.
Yeah, and that feels deserved, right? Like, it doesn't feel like you're talking smack about them or anything. They're just, they're really good, But there's just something maybe not even missing. God, I don't.
No, you know what I think it is? It's the difference between like it's the difference between like Mozart and Salieri, right?
Ooh.
Salieri is a great composer, but he lacks the prodigy-ness of Mozart. And so I think that there are a lot of bands. The bands that we know, the Queens, the Journeys, the Pat Benatars, they are prodigies of a sort of rock and roll. And I think that this band is great. Lucifer was really, really good and very skilled at playing guitar and great voice. You know, no element of this was bad.
I also do want to call out they've got a little bit of there's just a little bit of tongue in cheek, right? Like Ghost is very over the top, tongue in cheek. Like there's a satanic pope, but like it's all a big joke, right? Mm-hmm. This is not all a big joke, but there are like little jokes in there. My favorite joke is definitely there's a song title called A Coffin Has No Silver Lining. That's very funny.
Yeah.
Right? You know?
I like that. Yeah.
I did just want to call out that like they clearly kind of know what they are too, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. Like they know, hey, we've got a record deal. We're going to be playing festivals. We're going to be a big band. But I think they know that they're not going to break through and be like radio hits in a world where, you know, Taylor Swift and Chappell Roan and Olivia Rodrigo and a bunch of, rappers and pop artists are on the radio. That's just not what they're going to be, right?
Yeah.
And so they've got a little bit of a sense of humor about that, I think.
Do you know, I just made a connection in my head with the movie in so much as I felt about this music the way you felt about the movie. It was very interesting, but didn't really instill much emotion in me.
That's fair. That's fair. Yeah, that's a good connection.
And so, and I think that is something that is different from some of these other music. Now, I will say, while I was at one point, I was doing dishes, listening to one of these songs, and I did find myself bopping my head to it. Mm-hmm. And so it's not that it didn't.
Yeah, it'll move you a little bit.
A little bit.
You know, it'll move you a little bit, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Guys, if it sounds like we're saying we don't like this music while saying we like it, no, that's not it at all. We like this music. We just like it some, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It was just, I didn't love it. Like it's like that relationship you're in where you're like, I love you, but I'm not in love with you.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and this is maybe not love level music for me, but as I started to say earlier, there was no bad element to this music at all.
Sure. Yeah.
I think though that it also lacks greatness, and
sure.
so I think.
Sure.
What's that? Is that like a compressor limiter on quality?
Sure. You know? Yeah.
Is that a good
like,
musical metaphor for you to make?
The floor is nice and high on this, but the ceiling is kind of low, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I get that reference.
Yeah. Look at that. Wow.
Yeah. So that's where I'm going to end up. Now my predicament is, what do I rate this?
Because what do you rate something like that?
I feel like at one end, I'm not probably going to listen to this music much.
Mm-hmm.
But again, nothing bad about it. But kind
okay,
of average.
Well, let's look at... I'm going to look at the last 6 months.
I have an idea in my head.
The last 3 months. Okay. I'm going to look at the last 3 months. So Black Keys, you gave a 7.2. Belle and Sebastian, you gave a 7.2. Mumford and Sons, you gave an 8.2. And Emily Scott Robinson, you gave a 9.2. Then Gregory Alan Isakov, a 4. Breeders, 2. Mr. Wives, a 9. MGMT, a 7. American Football, a 6. Slater Kinney, a 3. Bastille, a 9. Rogue Wave, a 7. And last week you gave Live Ghost, a 6. So hearing those numbers, where do you think Lucifer fits into that?
Wow. I was leaning towards a 5, but I think... Actually, I was leaning towards a 6, but I think this is actually a 5.
You liked American Football better than this?
I don't remember.
Oh, that was the kind of the math rock band, the Midwest emo band. that we listened to for the...
It's hard to say. It's hard to say. I don't remember specifically. I'm just thinking this feels so average.
So right down the middle for you.
So right down the middle, yeah. Mm-hmm. Not average, I guess, because their skills are clearly better than average.
Right. But in terms of the way that you felt about it, it's kind of a five.
God, yeah. It feels inadequate, but I... You know, should I do six?
I mean, it's up to you, Travis. That we do not apply undue pressure.
We're rating. No pressure. All right. Yeah. No. You know what? I'll give them a little bit more. Just because their skill level is great, and I think that if they got a really good songwriter or a producer involved with them, they probably could be great.
Okay. Okay.
So I'll give them a six.
You're going to give them a six. Okay. Well, I am also going to give them a six this week. Mostly, I think, because I gave Bastille a six, and I feel very similarly about this. It's almost funny. I feel almost like I should like this better than I do, right? Like, when I hear it, I'm like, yeah, I'm into this. And then, 20 minutes go by, and I'm like, wait, how many songs did we listen to? Right? There's just this. So, anyway, so I'm going to give it a six. It's good. I like it. It's not great.
Yeah, yeah. Very cool. All right. Well, what do you have for me for next week?
Next week, I have a listener recommendation. So if you remember last week, I said Curtis Friesel wrote a very nice email. And in it, he recommended the Pulp album, whose name I forgot to look up. The Pulp album, Different Class. This is an album that came out, and there was a really popular song on this called Common People, and that for a long time was the only song on it that I knew. I love the song Common People, but I never felt compelled to listen to the whole album until Curtis wrote to me, and I did listen to it, and I was like, this is fantastic. And do you remember Blur, Travis?
From the bands that we listened to? Yeah.
Yes.
Vaguely?
Yes. Well, Pulp is another of those Brit poppy bands, and I would say they have some similarities to Blur and some differences, and so I'm really curious how you're going to feel about this. You did like Blur. I'm curious if you're going to like Pulp as well.
Great. So the band is Pulp. That was one thing. You call it a Pulp album, and I was like, I don't know what that means in this context.
The band is Pulp. The band is called Pulp. Yes.
Well, Curtis actually told me in another conversation that one of the things that he would like us to do is go through our playlist a little bit better when we're doing music, and talk about individual songs a little bit more. And I told him that one of the things that I would do to kind of as a middle ground for that is make sure that we tell people that they write in our video or write in our podcast episode information. Is a link to all of our playlists. So you can actually check not only this week's playlist that we're talking about, but also you put in a link to next week's playlist so people can listen to that with us. So you can follow along.
I do put in a link to both of those playlists for every episode. Yes.
Yep. So I think that if you as a listener are looking for more detail on the things that we're listening to, definitely hit up those playlists that are right in the... I keep wanting to say video info, but it's like just the episode
in the show notes.
Right?
Yep.
Show notes. Thank you. That's the word I'm looking for. So excellent. Excellent. Well, thank you. So you had asked. Did you want to ask again?
What do you have for me, Travis?
Well, Matt, we are coming to the very end of the summer here, and I've been resisting giving you a good summer blockbuster movie for many reasons. One, you don't tend to like them. We've already known you don't like superhero movies. But also because it's hard for me to find one that I like enough that I think will break through for you. And so what I want to do is go back about 15 years. I just rewatched one of the new Star Trek movies, and Star Trek has been experiencing a bit of a resurgence lately. And I want to take you back to the movie that kind of rebooted Star Trek. It's 2009's J.J. Abrams Star Trek movie. And it is the one that establishes this new Kelvin timeline with Chris Pine as Captain Kirk and Zachary Quinto as Spock.
Okay.
It's got a star-studded cast, and I just am curious how you're gonna see this kind of updated sci-fi J.J. Abrams Star Trek. What's interesting about this movie is that J.J. Abrams took it because at the time he thought it was the closest thing he could get to directing Star Wars. And one of the things I like about the behind the scenes of this movie is that there were basically three people in charge of decision making on it. There was one person who was a big Star Trek fan, one person who was not at all a Star Trek fan, and then someone kind of in the middle. And so they all kind of had to work together to make this a movie that would appeal. I will say, this isn't the best of Star Trek, which I think is television Star Trek. You know, good sci-fi exists best when you have the time to tell a good story.
Mm.
This is very kind of action-y oriented. And I will also say the sequels to it kind of are not as good. But
okay.
I still hold this first movie in high regard, and I am curious to see what you're going to think of it.
Awesome. Cool.
So, 2009 well, I look forward Star to Trek. It. Yeah.
I look forward to it. Hey, listeners. This week, Curtis Friesel recommended an album to me, and I gave it to Travis. You could do the same thing by emailing us at exposingourselvespodcast.com. No.
Nope.
Close. exposingourselvespodcast@gmail.com.
There it is.
Or they could do what, Travis?
They can also find us on Facebook. Just search for Exposing Ourselves and leave a comment on one of our posts or send us a message there. And while you're doing stuff for us, please just, especially now you're listening to your podcast, pull out your phone, go to the podcast app, go to our show page, and just scroll all the way to the bottom and leave us a review. Rate us if you would be so kind, and tell us what you think about the show. It helps because it also tells other people what you think about the show. So,
awesome. That's nice. Well, thank you so much to all of our listeners. And hey, Travis.
Yeah?
Thank you for exposing yourself to me.
Matt, thank you for exposing yourself to me.
All right. Bye-bye.